We're going to be talking about this. The series, the message today is called Be Generous. And we want to talk about James 1, verse 27. Pure and genuine religion in the sight of God the Father means caring for orphans and widows in their distress and refusing to let the world corrupt you. I don't know if that was meant to be a segue to Bruce's fashion choices there, but do not let the world corrupt you. But the idea is pure and genuine religion in the sight of God means caring for orphans and widows in their distress and refusing to let the world corrupt you. Has anyone ever dealt with bedbugs? Oh, you can turn to Isaiah 58 if you'd like. Anyone dealt with bedbugs and wants to admit it? Okay, cool. Thank you. I see that hand. It's okay, Aaron. We accept. Why is it that the very word bedbug freaks us out, right? And because they're so hard to get rid of. I once heard a couple that went to Thailand for their honeymoon. Where is Gabriel? They went to Thailand. Anyway, they went to Thailand on their honeymoon, came back with a backpack full of guests and souvenirs, crawly souvenirs, and they didn't know it for weeks, right? And they moved into this new house that they had built, and they got into this house, and about 6 weeks later, they started to notice that something was up. And it started to get a little weirder as they went along, and they realized that they probably had transported some bed bugs from a hotel that they'd stayed at in Thailand. And so they went about trying to get rid of them. And if you know anything about bed bugs, there's two stages, right? You got to get the living ones and the soon-to-be living ones. And so that requires about a two-week process. And so what they did was, this guy who's into construction, so he sealed up his brand-new house, stuck a big old propane construction grade, you know, big flame heater, and stuck it into a window somehow, sealed it up, cranked it up so this house was 60 degrees Celsius. And he kept it that way for quite a while, kept the house sealed up, and then 2 weeks later, gave it another shot, and problem solved. Now, if they would have been thinking, they would have thought about all the candles that people had given them for wedding gifts, but other than the melted candles, everything was fine, and they got rid of them. So I had this in my head, so when this lady called me and was struggling with bed bugs in her house, I had this in the back of my mind that these things are hard to deal with, and right away I started kind of getting a little itchy, a little crawly. It's kind of like when somebody says they have lice, right, and all of a sudden you start going like this. It's that kind of thing. So this lady, she calls me up, and she had tried some kind of powder insecticide thing that she had scattered all through her house, and it just didn't seem to be, and she had bite marks that looked like all over her arms, and the healthcare aide wasn't sure whether that was like maybe something related to whether she was hallucinating or something, but so we weren't sure all the state, but she called, and no one in our church wanted to touch it. They didn't want to go and help. And my go-to ladies that normally would help, they said, we're not going there. This needs professional help. Well, turns out that it was July 1st, and my parents were up to visit us for a few days. Now, my parents were missionaries in Ethiopia for 18 years. Bugs are not really that uncommon. I mean, our house was made of mud, right? You wouldn't know it to look at it, but all the walls were mud. And so... We had all sorts of interesting creatures. And so these 18-year veterans, they were like, come on, bed bugs. And they kind of scoffed at us. And I had my mother scoffing at me and minimizing my pain. And so I figured, well, I'll show you, Mom. And so we decided to go. I mean, my parents had their house fumigated so many times. It was, I don't know what that does to you. But anyway, it was interesting. I don't know what it did to me. I think I left the house during that time. But they had they were like, let's just go and deal with it. It's not a big deal. You bag up the clothes, you put them in garbage bags, no big deal. So what did I do? I took my son. And the four of us, my parents and my son and I, on July 1st 1 year, we went and spent the day bagging up clothes and breathing in toxic insecticides for a time. And my parents were laughing at us because we cleaned up this place, tried to help this lady out, and then when we got back to our house, Zach and I instantly, like, took off our clothes. We're like throwing them in the washing machine, and my parents are just kind of like, "What is with you people, right? Like, so missionaries, right? Like, they just, they're calloused." But the but here's the thing. Little did I realize that the time that at the time, and I didn't stop to consider this, but as we were kneeling in the lady's home, picking up her clothes and cleaning up the corners, that we were actually kneeling in worship, that helping this lady who was struggling with her mental state was a form of praise to God. The white powder that was taking years off our lives, sorry, Zach, was actually a fragrant offering. Too much? Bit of a stretch? I'm trying. But I've just been thinking about this. I think we lose sight of the acts that we do, and we don't recognize the deeper, higher value of it. That's an act of worship, offering our lives as a living sacrifice, that this is a way that we bring glory to God. And I tell you that story because I was brought to Isaiah 58 this week, and I was struck, do you go the speed limit through a construction zone at 11:30 at night when no one is out working? Do you slow down to 60 kilometers? Do you? Have you ever wondered as you're driving, like for, it seems like endless kilometers at 60 kilometers an hour and no one is in sight, do you ever wonder if this is really of value and worth it? Do you ever wonder if anyone cares or notices? Okay, well, I did tell you about my photoradar incident, so I guess you know about that, but sometimes you wonder if what you're doing actually makes a difference, if the motions, the sacrifices that you're making actually matter in the big scheme of things. Isaiah 58 in the NIV. "Shout it aloud. Do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their rebellion and to the descendants of Jacob their sins. For day after day they seek me out. They seem eager to know my ways, as if they were a nation that does what is right and has not forsaken the commands of its God. They ask me for just decisions, and they seem eager for God to come near to them. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves, and you have not noticed?" So the Israelites were going through the motions of worship. And it seems that they were eager to worship God and do all these things, and yet God didn't seem to be pleased at all. They never heard from God. And somehow, even though they were going through these religious actions, their prayers were not being heard and God was not responding. They were left with the question about what was happening. And they were going, how come God wasn't doing what they wanted, right? Have you ever wondered that? I've done all the right things. I've gone to church. I've prayed. I've even sang. Like, what's the deal? Why is God not hearing me? Why is he not responding? But God says this, I'll tell you why, is kind of the essence of it. He says, "Yet on the day of your fasting, you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife and in striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for people to humble themselves? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying in sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord?" See, denying yourself of food for a while and acting humble, bowing your head like a reed in the wind, that means nothing if your hearts aren't changed. God is frustrated with these people who would sing all the right songs and say amen at the right times, and yet still they exploit their employees, they fight with one another, they take advantage of people. And so he says in verse 6, "Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice, to untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and to break every yoke. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood." The fasting that pleases God is about treating people fairly. It's advocating for those who are oppressed, giving food to those who are hungry, providing shelter for those who are homeless, and giving clothing to those who can't afford it. This is the kind of fasting that God looks for. These kind of people don't turn away from relatives in need. You know, whenever people come to the church and they ask, they're in struggling financially, they need groceries or they need their utilities paid, one of the questions we always ask is, so do you have any family that can help? Over and over and over again, there's a fracture that's happened somewhere in the family unit. So whether it's children not caring for their parents or where parents have turned and just say, we can't enable this anymore, and they turn away from their kids. There's been some kind of a fracture that's happened. And in some of those cases, I'm sure there's good reason why they've chosen to put boundaries and limits on it. But at the same time, I'm struck by if family were to help family, how much the social structure in our society would improve, right? Like if we walked alongside our own kin, we would be so much further ahead. The idea of honoring their parents or caring for siblings seems foreign. And in fact, I've even heard this where people say, go to the church, see if they'll help you out, because we're just maxed out right now. Maxed out with what? If you start to look at what they're spending their money on, it's just that there's sometimes, not always, but sometimes there's a form of selfishness that's come in. So people who choose to care for the poor and the vulnerable, they stand out. The world that promotes self first or me time, that's easy to get sucked in, right? To believing that it's about us. And we forget to see other people's struggles, and we see them as not our problem. So in verse 8, this is the promise that comes. Then, if you do these things, if you care for these people who are poor and vulnerable and need homes and shelter, all of these things, if you do that, then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. He's got your back. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer, and you'll cry for help, and he will say, here am I. God is present right there. When you care for the needy and oppressed, your good deeds shine out. Jesus said that we're like a city on a hill, right? And people will see your good deeds, and they'll give glory to God. Matthew chapter 5. Goes on in verse 9. If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and the malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry, as the ESV says, you pour yourself out for the hungry, and you satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. All the darkness fades away, and you shine in the midst of the world around you. So if you want to experience God's presence in your life, you begin to care for the vulnerable people around you. Verse 11, the Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in the sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Wouldn't that be awesome, right? To have that renewed energy that if you do these things, God will sustain you. He will fill you. He will keep you. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. I really like the way the New Living Translation says it. Some of you will rebuild the deserted ruins of your cities, and then you will be known as a rebuilder of walls and a restorer of homes. Wouldn't that be a cool thing? To be known as, to have this reputation of being a person who rebuilds the deserted ruins of your city, that goes to the broken walls, the broken places, and is known to restore homes. Literal and figurative. We long to see homes restored and to bring life to broken places in our city. Every day we're confronted by brokenness, right? It's a part of our day. As you're driving along, you are confronted by brokenness, whether it's someone holding a sign in front of you or you drive by a place that's just not being cared for because they are unable to. Every day. But if we reach out and we try to alleviate the suffering that people are experiencing, we end up reflecting the light of Christ in a world that's filled with darkness, right? That is full of despair, that has no hope. Suddenly we reflect hope. We reflect Jesus. So, we see that God is not pleased by external religion that leaves our hearts unaffected, and he wants to see our lives that be transformed. He wants to see us change from the inside out. And as we become more like Jesus, this is revealed in the way that we care for others around us, those who are exploited and abused. And when we begin to care for the vulnerable, God's presence becomes very real and evident, and it brings light to our broken world. I was thinking how many social service agencies have started as Christian organizations. Whether they still have maintained that or not, the very beginnings, the heart of who they were, comes out of a heart for God, a love for God that is translated into a love for others. So, in this room, I have seen many of you living this life of worship, sacrificing personal time to sit with someone recovering from cancer treatment. I've seen others visiting and praying with a widow who's unable to leave her home due to a stroke just down the road. I've seen some of you drop off food for people who have none. Others are taking the time on Thanksgiving weekend to make pie for dinner on Saturday at 5:30. And, anyway, what was that over there? Anyway, giving up time to worship with those in this room so that you can help children downstairs worship God. Giving up Thursday evening and Sunday morning early to be here to prepare worship time. That's a sacrifice. That's giving up. That's actually fasting, right? It's taking what is yours and saying, I'm okay with giving this up so that others can benefit. Going out of your way to give a ride to someone, buying extra peanut butter and dropping it off for our food pantry. Amazing. You saw all the bins out there. Every month, those bins are filled by you. It's incredible how many people just kind of along their way, they think, oh, you know what? I'll get three things of peanut butter. We only need one, but I'll bring the others. It's amazing. And that is a sacrificial act of worship that is pleasing to God. So these sacrifices are all part of fasting, sacrificing to serve others. But then Isaiah 58 takes an unexpected turn. I don't really know if I like this turn. But God's been saying that he wants us to share with those in need, right? To care for those who are oppressed, to release those who are kept captive, who are held in bondage, to make sure that we aren't exploiting people. And he says that we need to care for the weak. And if you think about it, this is a long to-do list, right? It's kind of an activity list. We know what we need to do. Here's our marching orders. Isaiah 58 makes it very clear. We go and help those who are homeless, that need food, and you have all the bullet marks right there. You're good to go. But then he goes on and he says, if you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, actually the ESV says in doing your own business, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way, doing your own business, and not doing as you please or speaking idle words. So there's a whole bunch of ifs. Now there's a then you will find your joy in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride in triumph on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. Keeping the Sabbath is something that was unique to the Israelites. It was a God-given command that he gave to them. And he wanted them to rest on the seventh day, just as God had modeled for us, that after he had created all things, then he sat down and reflected on it and said, it's good. And it's that seventh day of rest that was so critical. It's stopping once a week, as Mark Laberton says, it's stopping once a week to remember that we are not God. To halt our work and reflect on God is to trust that enough is enough, that there's enough time to get done what's needed. And so often we get caught in the trap of saying, well, it's just a busy season. It'll slow down later, but I gotta press through. We've got this contract, we must press through. And weeks turn into months, which turn into years, and then you hear people say, I've never taken a vacation. Kind of proudly, right? Say, I've never taken time off. But how often does the season seem to carry on? It never ends. So even doing good towards others can become all-consuming. And that's what kind of caught me off guard as I was reading this passage. We have this long list of things, but even doing good can be hard to take a break because there's always more need. But remember this story. Mark Laverton tells a story in The Dangerous Act of Worship. It's a book that he wrote, where the woman comes into Simon's house and he begins to anoint Jesus' feet. She begins to pour out this very expensive jar of perfume on his feet. And people are indignant. They say, why is she doing that? She's wasting all this perfume, pouring it on his feet, anointing him. And this, why didn't she go and sell it and we'd give the money to the poor? Wouldn't that be more noble than just pouring it on his feet? And Jesus said, you will always have the poor among you. And so this act of worship that she was doing was a sacrifice that she wanted to give to him. And Mark Laverton says it well. He says, in God's rest, there is room for a simple offering, lovingly and earnestly made, even if others might call it a waste. So taking a day off and bringing rest into your life might be considered by some to be wasteful. You could use this time for something else, couldn't you? And you never stop, you never rest. And so even though the world around you and maybe even other Christians around you might consider that to be a waste of time, we recognize that this is at the very heart of God, that he wants us to take a rest because he is God, we are not, right? And so Mark Laverton says, if we don't lift our heads to see God in worship, we can't see what God wants to show us, which includes our neighbor. So as we worship God, as we take time to reflect, he opens our eyes. So now those people that we, because normally, if in my busyness, I kind of decide who my neighbor is based on kind of my proximity. I'm always looking around. If I take a step back and I reflect on what God is doing, what he wants for me, all of a sudden he can show me new things, a new perspective on life. So generosity grows out of our worship of God. So when we look heavenward and we take a day each week to cease our striving and our work, we recognize that there is enough time. When we take a portion of our money and we give that to God, we recognize that there is enough money. And when we fast by giving up food, or maybe it's an activity for a time, or it's your social media for a time, you fast on that, suddenly you recognize that there is enough time to share with others. You create space that you can care for others. Self-forgetfulness helps us to see God and to see others. So this month, we're emphasizing the generous fund. I'm going to ask Janet, why don't you come forward to the, what did we say, Glenn? This is the higher, oh, a high-level conversation. Yes. Yes. It's a high-level conversation. Thanks for that. So this month, we're emphasizing our generous fund, which is our benevolent fund, right? It's just simply a term that we use to talk about our compassion ministries that we're involved in at the church. And Janet's very involved with our food pantry, and so we appreciate that as she leads the team with that. But we see families every month that that come to the church, and we're presented with needs from our community and surrounding area each month. And so one of the things that we do is we have the food pantry, but we also have an ongoing benevolent compassion ministries fund that we do. And so that's something that I kind of deal with throughout the week, each week. And so I was just doing some stats on that. I don't know if you know this, but since January, we've helped people in financial ways probably almost 80 times that we've had interactions with people here at the church. And so that'd be like grocery vouchers, it's in gas, utilities, rent to keep them from being evicted, help with moving costs by renting a U-Haul, that kind of a thing. And that represents, I think it's 32 families that we've helped. And translates to about a new family to our connection here about every 10 days. So that might sound kind of normal, but when you think about it, each interaction is what, an hour to 6 or 8 hours, sometimes weeks. Anyway, these relationships that we build, I think this year we've given probably around $8,000 to people in different ways. That translates to about $280 a family. But we've helped 32 families so far this year, and out of that, 5 of them are from our church. I tell you those stats only for you to think through the opportunity that we have to reflect the love of Christ to families in our area. And so Janet's been very involved with the food pantry over the years, and you've seen the increase in 2017.
Yeah, we have to keep statistics for one of the organizations that we get some of our food donations from. So in 2016, we averaged each month serving 20 families with about 60 individuals in those families. And this year so far, our families have increased to 30 families with about 100 people. So I just feel so overwhelmed each month as I look at those numbers. Because I look at this congregation and I think, what are we about 300?
Sure.
Give or take some.
Depends
but you look at that and you think, you look at the bins out there, when you go out, you'll see them. Those bins are primarily filled by our congregation bringing in some extra groceries every month. And my heart is just so full every month, because sometimes I have to confess, I think, are we going to have enough this month? And we always do. So for the size of a congregation to be feeding 100 people every month, it's such a blessing to those families.
Yeah, and you've gotten some feedback from some of them, eh? Like, what are some of the things that you hear about with food pantry families?
Well, actually, I have one of the little letters that somebody wrote recently that I like to read. It says, we like to start by saying how in our darkest and most struggling moments, this program every month helps us in times where we need fruit and vegetables and such times just to get through another day. With having kids, it's been a blessing having somewhere available to help in such times. We wouldn't have gotten through the months at times if this resource wasn't available to us, and we thank you for all the people who work hard to make this available when times are hard, and our family is beyond thankful. And I know one of the families had mentioned to me that they're only able to go to the food bank, I'm not sure if it was because of their particular situation or if it's a broad rule, but 6 times in a year. So being able to come to our food pantry really made them able to feed their children. And as a parent, you know, I think anyone who's a parent would relate that you would, you know, do just about anything to keep your children fed.
Yeah, like when we look at our grocery bill and we think, like, how do people do it? A lot of times families will get around $1,200 a month that pays for rent, and then what else? And so how can they survive without any kind of extra help? Now, some of these families that have children, they get help from the government, and so there'll be more, but you also know more kids means more food. Yeah. Good grief. Get a young adult son. Try that, people. No, I'm just kidding. The cost of groceries, like, it's crazy. Like, sometimes people will come and they'll say, you know, can you help us? And I'll give them like a $25 gift card. I used to. And they're like, here you go. You know, like, hope you can get a thing of milk and, you know, maybe some bread and eggs. Like, it just does not go far at all. Think about when you go through the line, right? Imagine yourself to be someone else in that situation. And so we often will give $50 to people, but we know that that goes nowhere, right? And people, I've sometimes shopped with people, just, you know, it's easier to meet them there at that store, and I'll see what they've put through, and I'm going, that was hardly anything. And so people have this all the time. And so through the food pantry once a month, These are generous hampers, but they're, you know, the food bank is able to give much more. They have a larger portion they give, but we supplement so much with that. And people each month come to us and need that. So as we meet with them, tell us a little bit. Maybe it'd be good for people to know what happens with the food pantry morning.
So our food pantry is a full day, A couple of us start at 8 o'clock in the morning and head up to Spins Around. They're a rescued food agency, and we have to be a registered agency to be able to go and receive food from them. And it's kind of hit and miss what you're going to get from there. And so we head up there in the morning, and we leave there about 10:30 with my vehicle filled to the roof. And we usually stop at Superstore on the way back here. The two of us that head up there, we're only allowed two people at Spins Around. And we supplement our food pantry every month with things like potatoes, fruit, onions. Not a ton, but just enough to give a little bit extra of fresher food. And we head back here, drop everything off. By then, the rest of the team is starting to arrive, get our bins all set up, and then we head back up to the Lake Bonavista Safeway has been super generous, and they give us all of their day-old bread on the day of our food pantry. And so we get breads and cakes and whatever they happen to have on their rack. So every month it's a little, we don't really know what we're going to get, but we're always blessed, and we always seem to have enough.
And then as people come through the door, so we have a team of people, about eight people a month or so, that set out everything on the tables. And then afterwards, we have lunch together, which is always I really enjoy that time, because there's a sense of we're working together on something. It unifies us. And then there's almost this sense of excitement in a weird way of just kind of going, isn't this cool that we were able to be a part of putting this out? Then we wait for people to show up at 1 o'clock, and then they'll come through. What happens during that time?
Wow, there's so much. It's really hard to describe. The families come in, and you know, really through the years that we've been doing the food pantry, we've gotten to know them, and they'll often come and have a hug and share what's going on in their life. And so we really have had such an amazing time to walk alongside them in all of the things that they're going through. And sometimes we get to pray for them, and sometimes it's our prayers are private and away from those families. But as an aside, I would just encourage all of you, if you have time and you're thinking about a prayer list, to just keep our food pantry families on your prayer list. When we talk about the things that happen when they come, so they come in and we have our little chats, or they'll get their groceries and then we'll chat with them afterwards. And we hear all those things. The things that they share with us are significant. Like, I think that we often wonder, like, who is a person that needs the food pantry? And really our experience is that it's anyone. We've had people who are highly educated, an engineer who's out of university, that is an engineer who's out of work and has university students, and they're trying to feed their family. We have people who are on mat leave and don't have quite as much income. We have people in retirement, people who've gone through trauma and just struggling to get by, people who are upgrading their education, so they're back at school and trying to make ends meet, going through broken down relationships, children who have been hospitalized or gone through some kind of trauma. Really just so much, and they're so appreciative to come and receive groceries. But that relationship building doesn't come initially. Initially they come, and sometimes they're a little bit guarded, you know. I think it's hard to receive help sometimes. And so just by being there and walking alongside them and being able to share a little bit of extra groceries with them, it just helps them on their way.
And so it is interesting, because you'll have an initial conversation as you're carrying a pantry, a box out to a car, just helping them. The next month you'll see them and you might start to connect a bit more, and it goes a little bit. Sometimes you get a whole story right away, other times it's a growing relationship. What's been interesting is that this year we've started to actually see some of the people that help or have been involved coming to the pantry. We saw them at the Stampede breakfast. One guy, he hauled us over. He's like, oh, I want you to meet my wife. And he's all excited about introducing us to his wife and wanting us to be a part of that. community. He's actually coming to the Thanksgiving dinner because he's excited to be a part of now this growing group of friends that he has. And he truly sees us as his friends. It's amazing to see how people have cared and how that relationship is expanding. I think of different ones who are, in fact, Alan and I just helped a guy yesterday, dropped off a couch from Alan and Katie's house, and it was awesome to see how appreciative he was. I met him for the first time last year at the Thanksgiving dinner, and it's grown to a relationship where he was in the hospital a while ago, and he introduced me to the nurse, and he says, "This is my pastor," and I'm like, "We've had like five conversations," but he was just so he identified with that, but that has come out of the pantry, out of the Thanksgiving dinner, these things that we do, these benevolent kind of serving things are so much more than just food, right? And I think that that's what we want to get across, is that this is so much more than just meeting this basic need. This is about reflecting the light and love of Jesus to people. And we were having this discussion yesterday, it's not about somehow leveraging this conversation and like, I see that you have four bananas. It reminds me of this thing I've heard, the four spiritual laws, right? We don't do anything like that. If you unpeel this, you'll see that God has a wonderful plan for your life, that kind of thing. We don't do that. Like, we're just serving people, and we may not have that spiritual conversation with them, but somebody else might, and they will maybe have some of the barriers broken down about what they think that church is or who we are. We don't know, and we trust God in that journey to reveal to us how we respond to people. And sometimes there have been times where I've said to people, "Hey, can I pray for you?" And more often than not, they're like, "Yeah, for sure." And they have a tear at the end because they haven't had someone mention them by name in prayer before. They haven't heard that. There's other times where I don't go there because I'm like, you know what? You expect me to turn this into a prayer time. You expect me to give you the God talk. And I actually want to show you that we just are sincere in this moment. And so I don't back off. I'm sensing the Holy Spirit in that moment to direct that conversation. And there is a lot of conversation going on in my head. That would explain the blank stare on my face. But it's this sense of like, God, you must direct this because we don't know what their need is. You do. And we're trusting you to direct this. Christmas.
Wow. So in December, we don't actually run a regular pantry. The Spins Around is not open. And so we have done Christmas hampers the last few years. Last year, 2015, we did 30 hampers. In 2016, we did 46. And from that came some people who were thankful to know that we ran a food pantry and have been able to come and use the pantry since they were referred by someone in our congregation to get a Christmas box. So through this generous offering, the money is used for us to put together those Christmas boxes, and it's a significant ministry, and it's actually a lot of fun to put the boxes together and to bless people in that way.
Yeah, so I think last year we spent about $8,500 on Christmas, and then we took in other money that we used throughout the rest of the year for to help people along the way. So I think that so that was an increase up to over $8,000, and so that's gives you a ballpark of what we're looking at for numbers. So yeah, that's coming up. We would love to have donations for that, but also if you want to come and help pack some of those pantry boxes, we would love to have you come and see what's going on, because we as a church should be proud of a legacy of caring for our community that goes on for years and years. In From the Cold was part of that. Sandra Heinrichs was telling me about when she used to run the food pantry from the back stairwell somewhere that you're digging out some little cupboard, and now it's grown into this significant thing. And so it's very cool. Thanks, Janet, for your ministry. So what we're going to do is next week in the offering, if you want to be a part of this, you just put generous on your on the offering envelope, or it's part of the online giving page. I don't want this to sound like this is a major infomercial, because it wasn't intended to be at all. It's just saying you can be a part of what's going on, and just if God leads you to do that, join in. If he isn't, don't feel coerced ever in this, right? Because God reveals different things to different people, and we all have things that we're involved in. But it is an opportunity that you have to get involved here. And, you know, you can give to that any time during the year, but we put an emphasis on for the month of October in that way. Yeah. So wouldn't it be cool if we thought about what we do as we care for other people as an act of worship? Suddenly those inconveniences that we have, those things that come along that we weren't anticipating, suddenly aren't a disruption. They're actually an opportunity to worship God by giving of our time, sacrificing maybe something that we had planned to do and giving it to others. With that caution, though, that we take a Sabbath, that we take a break, that we do take a rest. And I'm telling myself this right now, because all of a sudden, you look back, and in a month, you know, I'm trying to remember when I took a full day, right? Have you all had this? You look back and you go, oh, this just kind of escalates, right? Who is God? Not me, not you, right? So we trust that God will provide, that he will bring people into people's lives that can care for them, and that he will be the one that's in control. We have enough money. We have enough time. We just have to have it in the right perspective, and we give it to God. May God give us wisdom and guidance.